Mini-episode 1947 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the AFC South preview for 2026. On the FDH Lounge. We have with you here today FDH Lounge original dignitaries Rick Morris and Chris Galloway. We're going all throughout the NFL, and as we'll tell you at the top of every segment, go back to the first one that we did, the 2026 AFC North preview. If you want to get our macro level thoughts on the offseason and heading into the season, the rest of these previews are narrowly focused to the division, except when we make points of comparison to other teams, which we did a bit during our AFC North preview. But for the AFC South one, for all of these ones, actually, I should note that the basis for this, the structure and backbone, as it were, comes from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And the feature in there that you will find at the back of the guide is the one run-on sentence for each NFL team. And here is our run-on sentence cluster for the AFC South for this season in the predicted order of finish. So start with Houston. The team still has some vulnerabilities in the offensive line, but the entire season hinges on whether C.J. Stroud's difficulties last season were merely growing pains or a troubling sign that he has peaked, because with that defense and the other offensive weapons, not only the division but the conference are right there for the taking if everything is cool behind center. By the way, side note, Houston was actually my pick to win the AFC last year. And what looked awful in September was looking a lot more plausible in January. Next up, Indianapolis. This is a good but not great roster with pretty darn good coaching that will go as far as the improbable Danny Dimes revival will take it once he is fully healthy, which indicates a ceiling at the wild card level. Tennessee. There's still some work to do in the trenches, but Robert Saleh walks into a pretty good situation with fewer holes than many realize, so this is a team that will sneak up on many observers in 2026. Jacksonville. This is the collapse team that almost nobody sees coming because of a comatose offseason. Because in this league, if you stand still, you're moving swiftly backwards. So notwithstanding a season in which all of the stars aligned during the season-defining eight-game winning streak, the Jags will crumble under the weight of a first-place schedule and the number of holes all over the roster. So I know, Chris, that when we did the two previous divisions, I had the general sense that you probably agreed with my order of finish on the teams coming into the division. And then some years there's the divisions where you just kind of don't know what the other guy's going to think. We go out of our way not to compare notes ahead of time here because spontaneity. So I don't really have any kind of sense of what your AFC South picks are. I'm going to guess that they're probably slightly less in line with what my other divisional picks were, but that's just my guess.
It would be helpful if I would unmute before I try
there
to stop.
There you go.
Some disagreement here. I'm going to agree. I've got the Texans on the strength of that defense winning the division at 11-6 is what I think. I have the Colts and the Jags tied at 9-8, and then the Titans at 6-11. And the reason I have the Titans at 6-11 is because I don't believe in Cam Ward. This is a quarterback-driven league, and as we have painstakingly painstakingly, you know, broken down the Browns' woes in our AFC North section. I will do the same here. I think, you know, if Jones was on his way to an MVP level season last year until he gets hurt. If he stays healthy, the Colts could be a very, very odd team and challenge the Texans. But I don't know that he will. They have some depth and hole issues that I'm not, you know, convinced get fixed. And so I'm not a big believer in them. I'm a believer in them in being above 500. So I kind of haven't been hard on like 9-8, you know, 10-7. And the same with the Jags. I'm like you, they're a step back. I don't have them tumbling back as far as you have them. Because again, I think quarterback play, coaching still matters, and it can erase a lot of deficiencies. But I still have the Jaguars come back. So I had them, you know, narrowly in that third place, tied for second in the division. So that's kind of what my comfort level was on that. If Daniel Jones stays healthy, the Colts could surprise. That's right. They could be 10 wins. They could be, you know, maybe as high as 11, but I don't think so. So that's why I went with, you know, that sort of 9-8, 10-7. I don't believe in C.J. Stroud. To answer your initial question in your run-on sentences segment, I think he peaked as a rookie, and it's been all downhill. But I do believe that this defense is real enough that they will just, like the Browns from a couple years ago, they'll keep them in all these games. And there's enough talent there to elevate the entire offensive squad. And it'll be enough for them to win games. I don't think they get into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to the Super Bowl.
That makes sense. I could see that. This is a spoiler alert that I don't necessarily see them on the level of being a Super Bowl team as I did last year. Because last year, it was sort of a process of elimination. I didn't think Kansas City was going back to the Super Bowl, and I couldn't make a case for Buffalo or Baltimore, who everybody else was saying, well, if it's not Kansas City, it's going to be one of these two. I knew it wasn't going to be any of the three of them, so I was looking for somebody outside that pack, and I was right that it was going to be somebody outside that pack. And had he not fallen apart as completely as Stroud in the playoffs, that was the case. So I was on that day. I happened to be visiting our very good mutual friend down in Mount Vernon that day and only catching parts of the game. But I was just shaking my head at Houston. I was just like, come on, guys, it's right there. You know, it was just not to be. And that was that they got a better look at it on that day than they're going to get this year, I think, because I think this year they will make the playoffs, but will not be that big of a threat to go to the Super Bowl. They'll make a run, but I have them coming up short again. As far as the rest of the division goes, I don't have anybody making a wild card here, do you?
The only one that I don't solidify all my picks the way you do when we do these segments, okay. I don't, because the way I have it broken down, I don't. So I have the Texans only, and I have the Colts and the Jags just missing it, because I'm going to lean heavily on the AFC West to fill the playoff spot.
That's what I was about to say. We got the West coming up next here, and you got
I was trying to think about one of my spots. My scribbles earlier today when I was going through it, and I have the Patriots getting in. Mm-hmm. And so that takes away that slot. And I only have the AFC North as a one-team division as well. So I have North and South as a one-team division. And then I'm putting a lot of eggs in the AFC West basket.
Yep. And identical for me, because I have the Patriots just missing it, but the Bengals making it. So either way, me and you got we both have three teams from the AFC West making it. And I'm going to go out on a limb that they're the same three teams.
Spoiler alert.
You know, yeah. Well, I Look, I was the guy a year ago with the very outlandish pick that the Raiders were going to make the playoffs, and that ended up, of course, not being the case. Notwithstanding, again, if there's ever been a funnier in retrospect week one game than Raiders over Patriots at Patriots with the year that so to where the Raiders get the number one pick in the draft and the Patriots win the AFC, there's never been a funnier week one game than that when you know how the rest of the season plays out. I was looking pretty good well before the leaves started falling off the trees, Chris. Probably before they were even changing colors, I was looking pretty good. But
yeah, but it didn't take long before I mocked you about every week about that Raiders pick. When you made it at the time, I was like, has he been hitting the hashish? Actually, I don't even understand what the hell he's thinking. And then, you know, they won week one and you were like, oh, and I'm like, yeah. Oh man. And then the suck started. And so of course I couldn't resist, like, how about them Raiders?
Of course. Of course. You know. I'm not gonna be a target for that this year, spoiler alert. But so you and I are probably picking the other three here in the AFC West, but in the AFC South, yeah, I mean, I think we probably broadly see it as being the same here. The one thing that I will say, and this is going to be one of the more interesting stories coming out of the South this year, I mean, you're the second lounge dignitary in 24 hours to hit me with the Cam Ward bust alert, the other one being FDH lounge dignitary Ben Chu. So there's a couple of y'all that are already starting to circle like vultures on this guy. I'm not quite there yet, but it's a thing where I will say this, and for listening, I don't listen to a lot of national sports talk radio. Where I will kind of make an exception is on the weekends if I'm in my car, Fox Sports Radio or VEASAN. And then Fox Sports Radio shows I think that are better are the ones that have some of the VEASAN elements in them, because that's a thing where ultimately, whether you're a gambler or not, those are more generally substantive type shows. Nobody's talking about, did you see what LeBron put on Instagram last night? They're actually like breaking stuff down. And there's an observation that was made about preseason by one of the analysts recently here. And I do agree with this in the sense of, like, it's hard to learn something good about somebody or some team in preseason because they're out there, even the guys that start the game, because of guys getting held out and injuries and stuff, there's still a lot of guys that are going to be driving UPS trucks in September. It's hard to learn something positive. It's not so hard to learn something negative about a guy, because it's like if you're set up to be in a situation where you should look at least pretty good and you step on your own Johnson, then it's like, well, what's going on here? So I would guess that you probably agree with that general assessment, Chris.
I sure do. I think preseason reveals to me who's probably bad versus guaranteeing who's going to be good, because there's been plenty of guys in the preseason who look like all pros. And then when the regulars start, you don't understand why they're even on the roster, right? And that happens every single year. Because again, what you said, you know, there's a lot of guys that look great against the third and fourth quarter players in the preseason. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean anything. And they're running vanilla defense. And you're running vanilla. Everything is vanilla. And people can look good. Where I tend to get a better sense of players in the preseason are your big uglies, your D and offensive line, because those are physical positions and you've got to beat or be beaten in a real sense. That's whether you're playing against the starter or the second string, you're at least playing a physical aspect, and I can watch technique. I can watch footwork. I can see, you know, I can see that. Like, so it's in the same way, like the Cleveland Browns, I could see Fano and I could see a guy that looks like he belongs, right? Like, he's going to be the left tackle for the next 10 years. I can tell already. I can tell that, you know, again, use another Brown, because again, I apologize to your viewers out there. That's just the team I see all preseason because of the market. I mean, I don't watch the Indianapolis Colts preseason games. I have no way to see those. But I can watch, you know, Mike Call Jr. and realize he's lighter, even stronger, and he's had a great preseason being physical and fast. I can see that. Now, yeah, there are times like, oh, he's playing some second stringers, and you got to discount it. But I can see the technique. It's harder to do that with some of the skill positions, right? A starting wide receiver, like, burned the third-string corner who won't even make the roster tells me nothing, right? There's too much distance, and maybe because of the lack of physicality. So I agree with that whole assessment. Is that, and I think that holds true of quarterbacks too, except when they're bad. And
yeah,
coming back, bringing this back around to Cam Ward, mm-hmm. I watched a podcast brief segment with a Titans guy who is, you know, was one of these, you know, one-off guys. He's got his little show, and he's always breaks down all things Titans. And he was breaking down that first preseason game where San Francisco rolled Curtis Work, the Ohio University's, the pride of OU, Curtis Work out there for San Francisco to play the Titans starters on defense,
mm-hmm.
with the second string 49ers team. And he showed Curtis, and he showed clip after clip of Cam Ward with the Titans starters against the San Francisco second string on defense.
Mm-hmm.
His analysis, and I thought he was right on what he was showing. He was like, guys, we're toast. He's like, we're cooked. He's like, Curtis Work is right now a better quarterback than Cam Ward. And he was unabashedly showing. And what he was showing is you could see it. It was like, he doesn't have it. And so for that reason, I'm going to go 6-11 on the Titans. An improved roster, improved coaching. It's not going to matter when you have a quarterback that can't get it done. And what I've seen out of Cam Ward in this preseason and some of what I've seen from him, and then in the second game, he looked equally bad. I just think the Titans are looking at that 9th, 10th pick, and they've got to go draft another quarterback.
Yeah, yeah, that's a heck of a situation to be in. Like I said, I'm not quite there yet with you and Ben, but I could be pretty quickly if he keeps going this way. So, yeah, that would be a little bit of a caveat on my pick for them for third place as opposed to fourth place with Jacksonville here. So, again, we'll have to see. But I did kind of half expect at least that both of us would probably have one team making it out of the AFC South in terms of the playoffs. Wasn't sure that we were going to agree on who that team was. I don't think we agreed a year ago on who it was going to be. So, ultimately, we'll have to see how it plays out in the South this year. We got the West coming up next. But thank you for being here for this one, Chris Galloway.
Before you close the book on the South,
close
the book on the South, I got one thing for you. Let's have a quick Danny Dimes conversation.
Okay. Yeah. I might have been wrong about him.
Well, he brought the Giants to the playoffs. Got a playoff win over Minnesota with the Giants.
Yeah.
Right. He gets run out of town. He goes to the Colts. He's having a great start to his season. Weren't they like 5-0? Like he looked like he was on
something like that
on his way to a Pro Bowl, all pro MVP type season, and then he goes down with injury. And then at other times with the Giants, you know, he looked like dog doo-doo.
Right.
Where are we at? Where's the jury on Danny? I don't think the book is closed on him at all.
If you said to me
he ends up having a great season, like he starts, because again, Shane Steichen is a great offensive coach. He has landed in a great situation with a great offensive coach.
A better head coach than Daboll, let's say. Daboll is a good, really good offensive mind, but Steichen's a better head coach than he is, and that's part of the difference, I think.
Well, whatever it is, Steichen, I think, gets the best out of him. And what I'm saying is I wouldn't be shocked if Daniel Jones has a Pro Bowl season in him if he stays healthy. And we're all talking about what kind of contract is he going to get next year? Because it was a small amount. It was just the beginning of the year, but God, he looked so good in those first 5 or 6 weeks till he got hurt. And I got to wonder this year. That's where I'm struggling a bit with my Colts prediction, because part of me wanted to kind of, you know, challenge the Texans a a little bit because, again, it's a quarterback league. And if I get that Daniel Jones with the Steichen offense that we saw in the first, 6 weeks last year, I'm like, man, if I get that for 17 weeks, the Colts might be the challenging for that first place in the division.
Let me ask
Jones may be on his way to a big contract. I wanted to have a brief Danny Jones conversation with you before we just slam the book on the South.
This is very interesting, and I'm glad we're doing this. I'm glad you thought of it because I want to ask you though, because I'm kind of observing that, and this might be sports science as far as surgical techniques, rehabilitation, etc. But like you and I both remember when somebody would have an Achilles tear, whether it be in basketball or football or whatever, and it would be, well, they'll never be quite the same as what they were before. So maybe like, I don't know if the peak would be like 85% mobility of what you had before, but like, it seems like you used to have to live with that as something hanging over you the rest of your career more so than now. Are you kind of noticing the same thing? Because that would have a lot to say about how I would look at Danny Jones. Because if it's still the thing of like, nah, Rick, you're jumping the gun here, guys still lose something that they'll never quite get back because of that, then that would affect how I would grade him. But if that's not something hanging over him, I might be inclined to agree with you. I'm just curious if you're noticing that it doesn't appear to be as much of a permanent black cloud on guys' careers going forward.
I don't think it is the same way ACL reconstruction is anymore.
ACL, we know. You can come back from. But as I do, Achilles used to be different, right? Like, you never get all the way back on an Achilles thing, and it feels like maybe that's changing.
I think it's still harder to come back from.
It is harder, yes.
But I think recovery-wise, it's like the ACL in that because of surgical techniques and then because of rehab techniques and then sort of the new stuff, right? I'm telling you, there's stuff going on that we aren't really understanding yet in terms of like,
sure,
stem cell platelets and other things that these pro athletes can afford to do that.
Oh yeah,
you're right. The dregs of humanity like you and I can't afford to do. But these guys can do these special chambers and special massaging sleeves and platelet replacement, and we're on the cusp. And keep in mind, and I don't want to get off on a huge medical science thing, but
sure.
With CRISPR and gene editing, you're on the brink of now the possibility of athletes, taking superior athletes and editing genes in the future, either before or after injury, and making them even faster and better through gene editing.
Wow.
So to answer your question, and that I think, little spoiler, if we ever talk Olympics, forget juicing, right? That's the next wave of, I'm going to put on my futurist hat. That's the next wave of your Olympic, stuff. It's like, are they going to have to start looking at guys and testing them with a younger baseline DNA and see if they've altered their DNA? And here's the deal, Rick. Is that cheating? If I edit your DNA? If you edit your own DNA, is that cheating?
I'd say yes.
Probably, but I don't know where people will come down on that because it's not necessarily artificial.
Here's the thing, though.
You're editing your own genetic makeup. But anyway, I don't want to get down that rabbit hole. That's a big rabbit hole. But I think to your point, because of the advances in science and better techniques in surgery and rehab and all the other stuff.
Okay.
I think that Daniel Jones can come back and be very close to 100% on that Achilles. Now, I do think still with certain injuries like Achilles, he's more likely to have it again, and that's the fear, right? Now, with a quarterback, I worry less about that. Let's say he's at 95% on that Achilles, right? And I know for Daniel Jones, the running in the legs is a big part of his game because, he has the ability to kill you with his decides when he wants to, even though he doesn't default to that.
Yeah.
But even him at 95% on his legs still makes him better than most of the league on his legs. And so to answer your question, like, yeah, I think he's going to come back and he's going to be fine. And he'll be able to perform. Now, I think because of the nature of that injury, I think you're just more inclined to have the same thing again. But let's assume he stays healthy. I think you're looking at Pro Bowl franchise-type numbers with that guy.
Oh, you could be. But again, Alec Pierce, and then you kind of wonder what happens from there. But I do, because you're not going to have Pittman in there anymore, and that is going to be a thing. But I do think, you know, when you're looking at one of the great young, you know, ascendant tight ends in the league, and we are getting to where there's a number of these guys on different franchises that are possibly stepping up to be difference makers. Tyler Warren could be, you know, one heck of a excellent, you know, secondary receiver for him, and perhaps even primary as time goes along as well here. But yeah, I would just say,
be shocked if the Colts are in a position trade deadline to trade for a wide receiver,
and
just like they did with
Sauce. I would think that would be the move. If they think they're in it, that's what they're going to do. I absolutely agree with that. When you talked about the possibility of, having a second Achilles injury here subsequently, famously, as we all know, 2001, 2007, Triple H. So, yes, you know, it is a thing that can repeat itself.
Yes, we all know that. Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. It's lightning can strike twice with that injury. Yeah, but so that's a possibility. Yeah, I'm glad you wound it back to him. And because, yeah, that's maybe the biggest wild card in the whole division. No pun intended, because I'm picking them to miss the wild card. But as far as what's Indianapolis going to do, it just, there's a range of possibilities. I will say this, and I don't believe that this applies to Indianapolis, and I'm going to try and keep this in my mind as we go through the rest of the divisions if I see a team like this. But teams where in the last, and I've been doing these divisional previews here, going back over a period of time since 2012. You've been doing all the ones the last several years. I think primarily Kyle Ross before that. But it was a thing where I remember one year with like Tampa Bay, and I was like, I can't pin down Tampa Bay. I can't pin them down. And they went like 2-14. And it happened like another time. So it's like when I see a team and I can't quite pin them down, they usually just completely shit the bed. So it's like I don't know what to expect here, you know, with them.
That was my struggle with the Colts, and why I said about 9-8, because I was like, is Jones going to get through the season healthy, the whole season? Yeah. And I decided to err on no, and that would result in a bunch of losses. If he is healthy, and you said to me, Chris, they're going to go 12-5, I wouldn't be shocked by that.
Yeah.
Which is why I was like, do I go, you know, do I go bold and have them edge out the Texans? You know, and the answer is no. I'm going to believe in that Texans defense, and I'm going to believe that Danny Dimes can't stay healthy all season, and that'll be the difference maker. And oh, what could have been for the Colts? But you know, I mean, that's why we do these shows, right? That's why we make these guesstimates. But I would say to your listeners, your viewers, I would say to your viewers, like, don't be shocked if the Colts are good. Don't.
I agree, and I would say also, too, we've not talked about the coaches, but and I think Saleh, you know, on the second time around is going to be much better. Again, getting away from the Jets, enough said. But, like, this is sort of a poor man's NFC West as far as the caliber of coaches. I really like the caliber of coaches in this division. I think that, you know, Ryan's and Steichen are among the best in the league. Cohen's only been there 1 year in Jacksonville, but the job that he did speaks for itself. So that's part of it as well, that this is that's a thing people sleep on with this division is. And again, and I understand it, because like coming into last year, we didn't know what Cohen was going to do as a first time head coach. I think we knew at that point in time Ryan's and Steichen were already, you know, fairly special kind of coaches. But like much like the NFC West, you're seeing that here. And that's what's raising the bar for the entire division, Chris.
Yep. Agree. Well said.
They're very, thank you. They're very strong. So as far as very strong, the cream of the crop for the AFC, of course, is the AFC West. That will be the next one that we do in our series here. So thank you, Chris Galloway, for being part of our breakdown today for the AFC South for 2026. And thank you all for checking out this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.